Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Kennedy, and you tune in today because you're sick of trying every fad diet under the sun and training yourself into the ground without seeing any results. That's why I'm here, to share the most effective ways to eat and train for sustainable and real results. What's up, guys? Welcome back to this week's episode of the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. I've got a cracking show for you today. I'm joined by Robbie Frame, Jared Hustler, and Alicia Gowans, who are all WBFF pros, and we're going to talk about all things nutrition, training, and mindset, and go into a little bit more detail about the training and food side of things when it comes to competing, and also the mental aspect of it as well. And in regards to competing, I'm talking about getting on stage as a physique competitor, but as you will hear in today's episode, a lot of these things translate and carry across into just the general population, people that are trying to get fit, people that are trying to lose a little bit of weight and take control of their nutrition and their training, and also get their mindset in a position where they are waking up each day with a goal. They're waking up each day focused and positive, and also making sure that you have that short and long-term goal that you're constantly thinking about to keep yourself motivated. We go into a lot of detail, and I ask each one of these legends a specific question, and then we kind of stem off those. So there's a lot to look forward to in today's show. Make sure that you stick around for the whole episode. If you enjoy it, please do take a screenshot of today's show and post it on your Instagram story. Tag myself and tag these three legends, which I'll have their Instagram tags in the show notes today. They are all very knowledgeable individuals that have a lot to offer, and you can go and check out their social media links. They are all absolute weapons as well. So sit back, relax, and enjoy today's show. Let's get stuck into the interview. All right, guys, thanks so much for joining me on the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. I know the audience today are going to be pumped to hear what we have to talk about, and there's plenty to get through.
Well, we are delighted to be joining you. So thank you so very much for having us on. And I'm so disappointed, Denny, that I missed out on the episode that we had you on, but I'm delighted to be a part of this one today.
Yeah, and guys, for those that have tuned in today, I'll have the link to the Competitive Edge podcast down below. You can go back and check out the episode I did with these guys and all their other content, which is extremely valuable as well. But guys, let's get stuck straight into these questions. So, Jared, I might actually start with you. And for those that are listening, what we're going to do today is kind of, I'm going to go over almost a specific topic with each Jared, Robbie, and Alicia, and then each of us will kind of chip in with bits and pieces, just so you get some value from all three of these absolute legends. And you've all, you know, the three amigos are all WBFF pros, I believe.
Yes, we are.
Yep.
So guys, you can take everything they say. It comes from experience, which is something that I find extremely important. It's all well and good to have the knowledge, but if you haven't gone there and done it firsthand, then for me anyway, I typically don't resonate with it as well. So these guys definitely know what they're talking about. But Jared, I want to start with you, and I want to cover the topic of training. So working with clients, I believe you work with Gen Pop clients as well as Comp Prep, am I right?
Yep, correct. I do anything and everything, really.
Amazing. So how do you approach your clients' training? So I want to kind of make today's chat more so about how you guys would coach others. And we can touch on bits and pieces about yourself as well. But how do you approach your clients' training? It's a pretty broad question, but answer that as best as you can.
Yeah, it is a broad question. But I think we also mentioned this, man, when you were on our podcast. And for me, it comes back to always enjoyment. And it's what people find entertaining more so, what they like to do. Now, when we're talking about someone in a comp-specific preparation time, you're going to have to do stuff that you don't like, guaranteed. But for Gen Pop, you know, saying you're going to do a six-day training program, you know, you're going to be breaking it down to the full bro split for, you know, let's say a 40-year-old woman, she ain't going to be wanting to do that. She wants to go in and train maybe 3 or 4 days a week, and maybe it's an upper and a lower body split, maybe there's some yoga or Pilates in there, whatever it might be. But finding enjoyment in your training, that I think is the key to being able to stick at it. And compliance to a program is key, because at the end of the day, if people are doing something that they don't like, they're going to comply and do it is very minimal. So as a coach, if I can get someone to comply to 4 days a week training, at the least, and it's something that they enjoy doing. You know, I do. I'm more of a fan of resistance training, whether that's, you know, breaking it down into your blocks of, you know, your strength or hypertrophy or power phase, whatever you're doing there. You know, we would be more specific for an individual trying to achieve a certain result. But for me, it always comes back to enjoyment and doing what you like, because you're going to keep doing it if you like what you're doing. So I think at a base, that's my first port of call. So when someone comes into me, I go through with what have you done before? What did you like? What didn't you like? Let me know. What got you results? What do you feel you didn't get results with? And then we go from there, because like I think we've said it multiple times and it will continue to be said, is people are individuals. Nothing is, you know, one-way approach. There is so many different facets to it.
100%. I love that answer. And you mentioned it just then, and you also mentioned it before, but individuality, and that is so important. And, you know, as you said, if you're not adhering to a program, then it's useless. We mentioned it on your podcast about how the most, you know, quote unquote optimal program, whether it be nutrition or training, is useless if you're not sticking to it. So individuality is huge. Now, when it comes to, you know, you mentioned there are a number of different splits that you might have a client on depending on what their goal is or how seriously they're taking it. But how often per week are you getting clients to be training each muscle group? I guess this is a topic that gets brought up a little bit in the bodybuilding circles, in terms of whether it is a bro split. Might need some coaching on how to speak here. Whether is it a bro split? Or, you know, whether you're hitting each muscle group twice per week, even, you know, there's people hitting them three or four times per week. So what's your take on that?
Now, very case specific again, but just a basic overview is whatever someone's lagging body parts, we might hit them with a bit more frequency. If they have dominant body parts, not so much. I mean, I've got some guys who have to train quads twice a week, which is, you know, torture for some guys. But then you've got girls who want to train glutes three times a week and you've got to back them off. It's like, hey, you've got to glutes. But you know, it does depend on what the individual needs again. But I think if we can at least hit all muscle groups once a week, you know, from a gen pop perspective, you're doing well if you can at least get in and train everything once. But if you're trying to progress and grow lagging body parts, then you might have to look at a little bit more frequency and then, you know, maybe looking at incorporating higher amounts of nutrition on those days and as such, like where you're at in your off season and in season phase. This is all going to play a massive part in how often and how much we train. But I think as well as people need to think about is how much you're resting as well to allow those body parts to grow.
Definitely. And again, that also comes back to individuality, because if you've got a client that's in seeing you, I would imagine that, say, for example, a gen pop client who is busy and only has that 60 minutes or even 45 minutes to come in and train, you're not going to be doing a strength block where they're sitting down for 3 to 5 minutes between sets, even though that may be in an ideal world, that may be the case to really build up their strength. But when you're looking at what's optimal for them, it's not going to work, is it?
No, not at all. It just comes back to what the person likes, what they can fit in a day, and also, I guess, their experience level. You don't want to put someone into phases of training that is way outside of their scope.
Yeah. Now, this is a question that I like to ask in a number of different topics, and, you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing, and I might get all three of you to touch on this, but when it comes to training, what are the things that stick out the most that you wish you had known earlier in your career or even just starting? And, you know, we could probably talk about this for 60 minutes, but... Give us a few of the main ones.
You know, look, if I jumped in first, I would definitely say, in light of the fact that, Denny, if you didn't know my story already, and for the listeners, I broke my back 3 years ago. Now, I broke my back because I had a hairline stress fracture that had come from many years ago with hypermobility when I was a ballerina before I went into bodybuilding. Now, I wish I knew back then and put the importance back then on mobility and also on execution and engagement with proper spinal organization of my spine prior to lifting, above all else. I wish I knew that back then because I would not have broken my back. That's the number one thing I wish I knew more of. It's a huge thing, yeah. But and the funny thing is, it's such a small time consuming thing. Like, it's the smallest component of what you would do with regards to that mobility and that, you know, proactive priming and engagement. But if I had have had that from day one, and I had had a better structured approach to what I was doing, you know, leading into a bodybuilding, you know, process, I would not have had that significant injury. However, having said that, nothing happens without reason. So I believe it's made me the athlete, the coach, and the woman I am today. So I'm not going to discount. I believe it. It did, in fact, happen as it was meant to. But had I known, I think I probably could have avoided that injury.
Definitely. And unfortunately, when you speak to most people that are just starting out in the gym, it's not even in the top 10 number of things that they're worried about when it comes to what they're looking at improving or what they're thinking about is important when it comes to training in the gym. But I'm very similar. Like, I'd wish I had to put a lot more importance on my mobility and especially activation. Like, I had probably 2 years where I was just, you know, spinning the wheels in regards to not getting my glutes activating, just getting a lot of back pain. And in the end of the day, I guess just wasting time, which could have been going towards making progress. But yeah, that's a big one. What about yourself, Robbie?
I would say that, you know, when I first started training, the first, 1 to 3, 1 to 4 years, I spent very much walking in there with an athlete mindset that stems from a background in sport where it's always about pushing yourself to the limit, to the nth degree, and using failure as sort of the benchmark of making progress. And in the first, you know, year or two of your training life, reaching muscular failure can certainly help in terms of progressive overload and making strength and muscle gains, but then newbie gains start to diminish. There's a law of diminishing returns of the amount of gains that you can possibly make. And I think if I had a better understanding of, you know, the underlying drivers of strength and hypertrophy with regard to not just, you know, muscle failure being one of many facets, but, you know, things like understanding that volume progression over time and just having that broader perspective where, you know, you can win the training session by just ticking the boxes as part of a broader plan. And I think that only comes through experience and just understanding that you don't always have to reach muscular failure to get progress. And I think if I'd known a little bit more about the quantitative aspects, I think I'd be able to fast track my development further. But having said that, just touching on what Ali's mentioned just before, with regard to the experience of having gone through that and having the trials and tribulations and getting initial success and then stagnating for a period of time, feeling as though you're treading water, that experience of frustration and having that inquisitive nature to go out and search for the information that would then inevitably lead to me making the further progress that I needed, you know, that experience molds you as whether it's a coach, a personal trainer, or just a fitness enthusiast. So, I would never say that the treading water period of time wasn't advantageous to where I'm at now, because what it's done is it's framed and provided me with perspective with how I deal with clients and communicate and educate them and how I mold and adjust and modify my own training now.
That's great. That failure one is absolutely spot on. I'm sure you guys are all exactly the same, but I spend a lot of my time, especially with new clients, trying to explain to them and also show them the benefits of not having to leave every session feeling like you're about to throw up or have to use the lift on the way down to the car. Once the client gets their head around that, that's when the progress really starts to happen. And you can genuinely see, I don't know about you guys, but you can genuinely see the enjoyment that the client starts to get from coming in, knowing that there's a process that they're following and knowing that each session is just an investment they're making in their long-term progress.
They're also enjoying it more too, Denny. You know, like, no one wants to be on the Biggest Loser every day they go to the gym to see their personal trainer. Do you know what I mean? Like, they want to actually go in and do things that are enjoyable, where they still see progress, but where they're not just actually having to have a walking stick for the next 7 days post.
Exactly right.
True. I reckon my biggest thing that I wish that I'd learnt when I was younger, and if I could say it to my younger self now, apart from, yes, both very valid points, and I can say from injury point, mobility, what Ali said, and proper engagement and performance or executing the exercises correctly. And from what Robbie said, like not burning out, because I remember when, you know, as a rugby player, it was more was better and as much as you can give, like more pain, the better.
Yeah.
And, you know, going in and training for, you know, two and a half hours in a gym session with cardio, you know, 6-7 days a week, that was what you did. But if I'd known more as well, I reckon from a rest perspective, you know, having more rest days to allow my body to grow and yeah. nutrition, understanding nutrition much better at a younger age, I think from a gains perspective could be much further along than where I am now. But I think everything that has been mentioned, if I could say that to my younger self, that would be the go-to.
Awesome. And can we all just take a moment to think about how amazing it would be to have those newbie gains again?
Oh, my God.
What a time to be alive.
Why'd you have to go there? Why'd you have to go there?
Danny, I would give all those little bikini divas a booty rundown. That's what I would do.
Oh, yeah.
Jared, a couple more questions on the training front before we move on to a different topic. When it comes to cardio and conditioning, and again, it is an individual case for each person, but are you more someone that leans towards expending most of the energy from the strength and resistance training and just using cardio as a tool if needed? Do you have clients that are doing no cardio at all, or are you someone that does prefer each individual to be doing a decent amount of it to get lean?
Well, okay, that's a tough one, because yes, it can go both ways, no cardio and cardio, but I prefer clients from about 10 weeks out to do a minimum of 20 to half an hour every morning. And it's not from the fat burning perspective, it's from the mental gain mm-hmm. perspective. I reckon from about that 10 week out mark, you need to be getting in a grind. It needs to be a daily setup, taking 20 minutes to half an hour every day in your own thoughts to set your day up and know where you're going. That for me is a big one, because from 10 weeks out, if you're not prepping yourself, you're not going to make it. But for me personally, I love food. So I'll do more cardio if it means I can eat more food. So if it means in a comp prep that I have
to do... We all train for, isn't it?
if it means in a comp prep that I've got to do 45 to an hour of cardio each day, I'll do it to keep me more fed, because I just love food. So, but yeah, when the time comes, cardio,
yep.
I don't think you can negate that it is a necessary key if you want to bring the condition at the end of the day. So I think it does have its place.
I like the reasoning behind that. I like the reasoning behind it. And then the last question I wanted to kind of ask you is, obviously, the nutrition component is probably the biggest factor that changes between muscle growth and fat loss. But in terms of your client's strength and your strength and resistance training, does it differ much between a muscle gaining phase and a comp prep phase or a fat loss phase?
Oh, definitely. So, I guess if we're going into a gain phase, an off-season phase, we want to start to utilize those calories. And each client, again, being an individual, will get a different plan in terms of like how we're going to structure nutrition in terms of what body part we want to grow. So I like to try and couple nutrition with lagging body parts per se, so you get more calories on the days when you need that muscle group to grow and less calories on the days when you don't essentially need as much fuel for that muscle group. And then as we come into, I guess, a comp prep phase, and as the output increases, we're going to probably reduce the amount of load, because you're not going to be doing, you know, one rep maxes at 1 week out. It's not going to be beneficial for anybody. But yeah, as we decrease the amount of food, we want to decrease the load as well that's getting put on the muscle. But hey, each client's individual, and how we play with that, I guess, it's very specific to their needs.
Awesome, man. And for those that are listening, I think the biggest thing you can take from everything that Jared said here is that it is individual. It is a case by case, and you need to find what works for you. There's obviously guidelines and different ways of approaching your training that are going to be pretty standard between person to person, but
in terms of the way you're training, how many times a week it is, how many times you're training each muscle group, how much cardio, all that different stuff, it does come down to you as an individual. So appreciate your input there, Jared.
Thanks, mate. Too easy.
Ali, I want to move on to you now for a little bit, and the fellas, you'll still get to have a bit of input too, so don't go anywhere. Now, being in a position that you're in at the moment, Ali, so obviously as a competitor yourself, but also coaching clients, mindset is obviously a massive thing. And anyone that's been through a comp prep or even just a fat loss phase, to be honest, knows how important having a positive and strong mindset is throughout that process. So I want to start off by asking what your why is.
This is actually a really incredible question because I think there's so many levels and layers to this. But, you know, look, I guess largely speaking, what I'm all about and the reason we put the podcast together and the reason that I coach like I do and the reason that I try to reach as many as I can is that I'm largely about education. I'm largely about value adding, but I'm really, really big on leaving a legacy of creating optimal health and a, I guess a platform for people to reach their full potential. So whatever that space might be in, whether it's in their fitness realm or their personal life. And you're right when you say mindset is king to the whole thing. So we work largely on the inner game to then get the outer game to do what we want it to do. But my why 100% would be about the concept of living my best, my most healthy life for my family, so for my loved ones, being in optimal health and quality of life for the longevity of life, but then also sharing that passion and knowledge and know-how with as many people as I possibly can for as long as I'm around. That, like, really, that's my why.
That's awesome, and it definitely shows. It definitely shows. And for you yourself, I'm going to ask you a few more questions soon about how you kind of approach it with your clients. But as an individual, how do you stay motivated? Because, you know, I say to everyone that, you know, I often get asked the question how I'm constantly motivated to train or how I'm constantly motivated to eat well. And the truth is I'm not. I don't think anyone is motivated 365 days of the year, every year. So on those days or weeks where you're not as motivated, what do you do to kind of get yourself back up and about and back into a groove again?
You know what? This is such a good question because I believe that it doesn't, I don't even care if you're the goddamn Pope, you're not going to be motivated to preach every day of the year. You know what I mean? Like, we all have that period where motivation wanes. And I think that that's where discipline and habit and routine come into play to keep you on track, regardless of the lack of motivation. But for an extra, I guess, incentive or for a period of time where, you know, especially if it's in a period of time that matters most for me, which is coming into a stage, obviously, for me, it's progress. I don't look for perfection. I look for progress, and I look at myself, and I don't look sideways at anyone else. I don't compare myself to someone else's race because I'm running my own race and staying in my own lane. But I want to be faster and better than I was in the race previously. So, you know, for me, it's a constant checkpoint back to, is what I'm doing aligned with my values? Is what I'm doing still, you know, aligned with my why? And am I progressing? As long as I can see progress and celebrate that progress, then it gives me that extra a step or pep in my step even just to give it that little bit more that in that session where I might not necessarily be feeling it. And lastly, I think one of the other things I draw upon, which is probably so significant now in the space I sit in, is I think about my athletes and I think about my team and I think about the fact that if I'm in a day where I'm not feeling it, they're going to have a lot more days than I ever will where they don't feel it. If I can't turn up, show up and give my best on my down day, how the hell can I expect them to do it? So I've got to lead by example always. So if I can't kick my own ass, I let them do it for me.
That's awesome. And guys, Robbie, Jared, I'd love to hear your input here as well. What about yourselves when you got those days or weeks where it's just nothing's really clicking? How do you get back into gear and what motivates you guys to stay on track?
It's a very good question. I agree wholeheartedly with the notion that you're not always going to be motivated. Motivation is heavily influenced by emotion, and everyone is dealing with an emotional roller coaster in their life. You're going to have your ups, you're going to have your downs, and I think I've always tried to hone in on processes more than anything else, ticking boxes, because, you know, if I can tick boxes along the way at a certain level of expectation, that lies in with the standard that I set for myself, I'm more inclined to be able to reach the goals that I've set for myself. So I try to focus on processes and have that, whether I'm dealing with high moments or low moments. But, you know, when dealing with periods of time when you're going to be in a rut, and at times it's often, especially because our podcast has a focus on competing, you know, people often finish up a competitive season and times they lose a sense of purpose, and they've come from a euphoric high, and they'll go through a low period where you lose a sense of direction and purpose. And at times, especially the last few, I've done two competitions this year, and I actually had to put myself in check about 2 weeks ago, where you've come from this euphoric high and intense focus, and then you lose that sense of purpose and direction. You're probably not, you feel like you're, you know, treading water, or your wheels are spinning, and that's where you need to take a moment and actually, you know, reassess what your goals are. And touching on what Ali was mentioning with your why, if you can hone in on that to provide yourself with a new sense of direction, you'll find that you'll be able to approach each day with a greater sense of purpose. So that requires a sense of self-awareness to be able to pull yourself in check and sit down, reevaluate your goals and how you're going about doing things. Because I think by having that perspective, you're able to see value in a lot of the daily tasks, which from one perspective might seem like the daily grind. But if you view them in a different light, in line with what your whys or what your goals are, you'll be able to see them in a happier, healthier mindset. So I think just taking a moment to compose and look at those goals can be incredibly important. So having that self-check-in from time to time.
Awesome. I don't know what you guys are on about, because I'm motivated all the time. I'm Insta famous fitness people. We're robots. We're always motivated.
Oh, my God. No, I want to get your wife on here for 1 second to answer whether or not that's actually true, because we all know that's a lie.
No, of course it's a lie. We're not
motivated to turn my steak on the barbecue.
we all have times of doubt and worry and unmotivated times where, you know, we just feel like we're down. And, you know, I think what Ali touched on, the clients, that's a really big one, though, because that's a constant kick in the bum for myself as a coach. One of my biggest motivating factors, I think, my family. So for me, like, I've got two beautiful little boys, and you know, if I feel down or I feel out, they don't care. They said Dad was going to take him to the park today. So, Dad, you're taking us to the park, or whatever it is. If I make a promise to them, I've got to keep that. Same thing, like, you know, with your clients. Like, you're setting an example, and you've got to be the trendsetter. I mean, there are times when I need to have a reality check, and that might be I'm cooking in the kitchen and the missus comes and gives the back fat a little pinch. But, you know, I mean, as coaches, we all keep ourselves in check and try and keep ourselves motivated. I like to look at athletes that I compete against as motivation as well, because I'm always striving to be the best version of myself and put a better physique than I did on stage. But, you know, we do compete, so it's competition, and being better than the person I'm putting a physique on stage against is a big factor in what we do. I mean, constantly going back and looking at where you're at and how you're progressing, I think having a plan, a well-structured plan, is imperative to making sure that we deliver on a better physique, and that way we can stay motivated. We know, no, I'm in this phase for 6 or 8 weeks or whatever it is, see this phase out, and then we're into the next phase, or however you've got your thing structured, your plan, but make sure that you have a plan, because without a plan, we're just spinning wheels. For me, that's a big one, is having a plan, and I've got my motivating factors there behind me that constantly keep me pushing forward. But that's me, pretty much.
That's great. Yeah, I couldn't agree more with all of your answers there. Ali, I want you to imagine that I am someone that's come to you for advice, or as a client, a potential client to compete, or even just go through an extensive fat loss phase. How would you explain to me the highs and lows, the mental highs and lows of what I'm about to go through?
Oh my Lord. Look, I'm known for being probably one of the most honest coaches you'll find out there when it comes to painting the most accurate portrayal of what the road ahead looks like. You know, I don't believe in sugarcoating anything. So I believe in people, I believe in managing expectations, but I also believe in setting people up for success. So that also means, you know, letting them know that this is the duration of time in order to achieve what we're setting out to achieve. This is the phases we're going to go through. In these phases, it may look like this. You might feel like this. This might be the outcome. And then the whole way through, I'm a very collaborative coach. It's very client-centric coaching methodology that I utilize. So their engagement is really heavily involved in the entire process through the stage. So we're in constant communication. There's constant loopbacks, biofeedback loopbacks. But there's constant conversations at all checkpoints about where they're feeling, where they're going, and then what to experience like right around the corner. So from day one, I map it out and give them the broader, you know, baseline as to what it might look like and just how much. You know, that yes, there are sacrifices that have to be made, that yes, we will make it as sustainable and lifestyle friendly as what we can, because I believe in that. I believe that yes, it should not be an aggressive strategy as a stage. It should be an enjoyable one. And we should find, you know, a balance and a baseline point where we approach it in a way that gives optimal health at the end of the day, no matter what. But at the same time, there will be sacrifices that will have to be made. And so I will go through the warts and all and paint it exactly as it is, because I don't believe in setting someone up for failure for their expectation to be, you know, sorely missed on what the actual reality of the process becomes.
Love that. And I couldn't agree more. Honesty from a coach or as a coach, even for myself with general pop clients, like, you know, you obviously have to have that relationship and that rapport there with the client, and they need to know that you actually care. But part of caring is being honest, because if you're telling them just bullshit to make them feel good, then exactly. Guess what? They're not going to see the results. It's not going to be a positive effect on them in the long term. So, I do love that. And you mentioned that there's a lot of back and forth between you and your clients. So is there anything that you put in place for them to win their day? Is there something that you get them to start their day, whether that is
100%.
A meditation or whatever it may be?
100%. There's probably a couple of different things, Danny. Like, in all honesty, as we talked about individuality, right? So every single person is at a different stage in life and in their own personal development process. And this journey of physicality is a personal development process. It really is. And no one should ever downplay the fact that the inner game is, as I mentioned before, almost more important than the outer game, because if your head's not strong, your heart's not strong, the physicality won't even become the outcome that you want it to be. So, you know, we work a lot on mindfulness and, connecting into the reasons they're doing it. But we also, look a lot at like objective based outcomes. So, you know, what is the objective for the short time or long term or midterm timeframe we have together? What are the goals we've got and the whys behind them? You know, what is it that we've got and the tangibles? And then we put in place, you know, the daily habits. But every single one of them gets, different strategies from me that is going to suit them and where they're at in their life cycle, I would probably describe it. Because some of them, it might be, waking up with visualization strategies. For others, it might be waking up and listening to motivational podcasts it might actually be waking up and doing mobility-based movement while listening to something, or it might be that they've got post-it notes on their bathroom mirror with certain phrases or statements or figures even that are, you know, going to paint the picture for their limbic to then go out and roll out what we want from a goal point of view. There are 101 different strategies that I've got, but it's tailored to the individual always. There is always going to be a daily habit that we have that we go through, though, absolutely. And at any point in time, if they become what I call stuck, then we coach through that by looking at different objectives and different ways around it. And they often get what we call homework, you know, where they'll get little activities to go away and do that are around, you know, self-awareness, clarification, sentiment, refocusment. So, you know, a lot of those things that we work on. And I think, you know, it's imperative to have the two-way communication and to have that collaborative, engaged process from their end. Otherwise, without their buy-in, there is no goal if the intention does not match it. There is no outcome that we'll ever be able to achieve that would be what they would be looking for.
Without a doubt. And, you know, as we spoke about, like, the long-term goal is there, but without the, you know, without doing the small things well consistently in terms of day after day, winning your day after day, then the long-term goal doesn't happen, does it?
No, exactly right. And look, even just as simple as, and you know, it's great when you've got a system that actually has, you know, automation where you know, like ours does, where it links into things like Fitbit and MyFitnessPal and other things. But even just the simple things of ticking off the boxes of water intake and then, you know, logging their food and then just logging their workout so that, you know, that from that point of view, those structural things have been done. But a lot of the stuff that we go through, you know, with, in particular with my team, it goes beyond just those things. It's actually the other stuff. It's the stuff that, you know, gets them to a place where they're not reacting out of emotion, but they're actually building their future with, you know, with the intention of what they want to achieve. It's yeah, probably a little bit different than just ticking the boxes on the physicality.
It's good. It's good. I like it. I love it. When it comes to, now Robbie touched on this before actually, but when it comes to post competition stages, and we've all been through this, and I'm sure you can all agree that especially early on, it's a very difficult stage. And I think Robbie, you mentioned it before, you almost feel lost. So how do you prepare a client for that post-comp stage, and is there any strategies that you like to put in place, whether it be goal setting or whatever it may be, to get them back on track as soon as possible mentally?
Yeah, look, absolutely. I'm in constant, well, basically what I do is I actually do a series of videos. We have, you know, obviously a community that they're all a part of, and leading into the show, I'm constantly on live feed or doing videos that are, you know, very much about, you know, what's ahead, what's coming ahead, what to expect and what have we. And then the same goes for coming out of the shows. So they get that, they almost are set up before they go into the show, knowing exactly before they even hit the stage where I know I think they're going to sit, and I have a very honest conversation about that, where I think we are sort of positioned in the playing field, where I know we're going to go from there. And then we've already, before they even hit the stage, we've already decided, you know, after this is where we're going to go, this is going to be the next stage. And it's just a process of rolling out a mapped out reverse structure, so they're reversing out safely, we're moving up and out into a surplus, and we're taking care of the body that's given us so much in the process of getting this, you know, peak condition for that time frame. And then we're really starting to, you know, nurture it into a development phase to grow towards the, you know, development of any areas that we need to bring up for the next stage. But at no point do they not know what's coming, and at no point do they not have me holding their hand in a sense. But we paint the picture always, and we paint the picture that falling over is okay. And if you don't get it right, that's also okay. And if you screw it up, we've all done it. We've all been there. It's how you have the ability to communicate and speak about it and get help through it that makes it okay. It's if you don't have that ability, that network, that support network and that safety net around you, and you're falling, that makes it, you know, a really dire straits for a lot of competitors out there. So, you know, I think the key here is there's systems, there's infrastructure, and there's processes around them always, yes. But beyond that, there's just the okay to fail sometimes while they find their feet, because the first time that you reverse out of a stage, anyone I know is going to screw it up. You're going to in some way make a botch of it. Boys, I know you would agree with me. We've all been there and screwed it up at least once, but hopefully you don't do it more than once. You'll learn from that, and you know, you just don't stuff up twice.
Like, yeah, exactly right. And you know, some of the most successful people that I've come across or even read up about or listened to podcasts on, they're the ones that have had the most failures or the most stuff ups that they've had to learn from mistakes in the past. And that's how they've ended up where they are today. So I think that's really important. Before I move on to Mr. Mustache Man, Robbie Frame, the last question I had for you, Ali, is how's your mindset around prep, especially at the start of prep, change today compared to the first time you stepped on stage?
Oh my goodness, so much, Denny. Hey, like I've spoken about this with my team at length, and it's gotten to the place where, and this has been really, if I'm being very honest, probably for the last 3 to 4 years, I've enjoyed this space where it's absolutely enjoyable. When I first started, you know, like anyone entering this sport, it's overwhelming. It's daunting. It's completely out of your comfort zone. It's restrictive. It's all of these things, right? And I think that it's over time with experience, and it's with, you know, years of finding you, I think, finding more about you and finding what works for you and how your body responds and how best to get the most out of, you know, what you're doing, when you start to get to that place where you're in this level of comfort in yourself and then also in this sport, it becomes easy. And now, you know, look, my mindset is that this is genuinely, really honestly a lifestyle for me. So for me, and I was just speaking about this with a couple of girls that are in Peak Week with me this week for a show this weekend, I don't actually ever feel like I'm in prep until I get to a point where it's usually about 2 or 3 weeks out, and it's usually only mainly because of workload. I start to feel it physically because of my back, my previous back injury. It's only at that point, and it's really only momentarily because I do a whole lot of mental exercises to take me back out of it, and then I'm sweet again. So, you know, I do think my mindset has changed from it being a laborious task at the beginning to now being such, it's an enjoyable way of life. Like I don't know any better anymore. I can't even imagine my life not being like this. Like even well after a stage is in the horizon, I will live this, you know, optimal health focused life. And it's not that I don't enjoy the odd red wine or a sweet potato fry, trust me, because I sure do. But it's just about balance. And it's just, like I said, this is just life now.
Awesome. I think that should be the goal for everyone. And we touched on this when we had a chat on your podcast the other week, Jared, Robbie and I, and how, you know, I was very similar in my last few shows, getting to the point where from previous shows, I was almost a little bit worried about why I wasn't feeling shit a few weeks before my show, but also looking the best I'd ever looked. So that's a really, really good place to be. All right, Robbie, mate, it's your time to shine.
Hit me.
But again, this could go on forever, but I want you to try and keep this nice and short.
Give us a very quick rundown
on what your approach is to nutrition for those that don't know. But I will just briefly mention that, guys, for those that are listening, if you haven't already, I have done an episode with Robbie on the show in the past. So definitely go back and have a listen to that, because there was plenty of gold nuggets in there. But mate, give us a rundown of what your approach is.
Yeah. So look, in a bygone era, a number of years ago, when you first start, you get a lot of your fitness information from Flex Magazine. It's probably a little bit misguided, at the very least. Often the understanding with regard to nutrition and what's going to work in manipulating your body composition is quite one-dimensional. And it's only through trials and tribulations, a lot of learnings from personal experience, client experience, and also through doing your own research that I'm now more of an advocate of flexible dieting principles. And I think that's the biggest thing is, in the past, I would have been all about trying to find the definitive protocol that's going to work for everyone. And I remember I used to preach from a pedestal, talk down to clients and get with bemusement that they weren't able to adhere to this highly restrictive protocol. You know, eat 6 meals a day every 2 hours. And if you simply cannot time it to the letter, you don't want it badly enough. And I look back at that now and I roll my eyes, and I'm more about an advocate of flexible dieting principles, prioritizing factors that are most important, and then molding the protocol around the individual rather than trying to mold the lifestyle around the protocol. So prioritizing key things like energy balance and macros, and then obviously looking at micros, but making sure that flexible dieting is where I'm at now, and I've found personal success with it and a lot of success with my clients.
Love it. And I know in terms of the discipline, or as you mentioned, the volume dial, there is a bit of a difference. But when it comes to working with Gen Pop clients compared to Comp Prep clients, is the process exactly the same? This is something that I talk about with a lot of my clients, but is the, you know, in a broader picture, is the process of dieting the same compared to a Gen Pop client and a Comp Prep client?
The principles are the same. The principles with regard to the processes required to lose body fat are the same. But one of the things we discussed on a previous episode when I was on here was this concept of the volume gauge, the level of accountability and scrutiny with your tracking, how detailed you are with regard to weighing everything to the nearest gram. What I would say is that often a lot of Gen Pop clients, fitness isn't their life. It's a facet of their life. Mm-hmm. And the important thing is to seamlessly integrate fitness into their life so that it's a benefit, not a burden. So when we talk about that volume gauge in terms of the tracking, the scrutiny, you know, if I'm a competitor and I am looking to get razor sharp condition to the nth, and every Metamucil of or portion of food needs to be tracked to the letter in order to get the stage ready condition required to take out first place, I would say that my volume gauge on a scale of 1 to 5 is at 5. Like, it is peaking. It is right there. But is that advantageous to have someone tracking everything down to the letter if they're at a higher body fat percentage and fitness isn't their life? That's where you really do need to turn the volume tracker down. That's not to suggest that the level of accountability shouldn't be there. But, you know, if someone's at 22% body fat, do they really need to be micromanaging the tiny details of nutrient timing to the nth degree? And if you bombard them with that, you may find that their adherence to their fitness protocol overall goes out the window. So I think, you know, the process, the behaviors are somewhat similar. The process required to lose body fat's the same. It's more about the level of accountability and, you know, the scrutiny with which you track. And you get quite anal retentive when you're 1 week out from competition and you're micromanaging sodium, and nutrient timing and this, that, and the other. And seeing how your physique looks on an hourly basis type thing when you're in that peak week. But when you're dealing with gem pop clients, do they really need to be scrutinizing that? Probably not. And as a result, it really does depend on the level of accountability in line with what their goals are. For gem pop, a lot of the time is I just want to feel comfortable in my own skin. And it's as much a psychological thing as anything else. When it comes to a competitor who is, you know, heavily focused on getting to the stage and getting a certain result, that volume barometer is going to go up tenfold. And it's important that as a coach, you're able to identify when you need to turn the volume down and when you need to turn the volume up, not just from a physical or a metabolic standpoint, but also the psychology and the mindset of the client and where they're at.
Yeah, I love that. Couldn't agree more. And I know you work a lot with Gen Pop clients. And I want you to imagine, so I'm asking a lot of hypothetical questions here, tend to be good at that today. Imagine that I am a Gen Pop client that has had no real experience with dieting at all. And I come to you, what is something that you're going to get me to do initially to get into the habit of, you know, tracking calories or just even figuring out what they should be eating or getting into some form of routine where they're eating towards their goals?
So, you know, one of the things I find is that often fitness consumers will purchase, you know, plans from a PT in 4 week or 8 week blocks of that description. And unfortunately at the end of 4 to 8 weeks, the trainer never really has the opportunity to take that client with regard to their understanding of nutrition from unconscious incompetence to where you want them to be, which is consciously competent and aware of the foods they're eating. And you sort of get halfway along the journey with the learning development phase, and then for whatever reason, life gets in the way and they can't commit further. And that's where you really want their understanding of nutrition to evolve over time. And it does take time. But at the outset, you know, At first, and this is where you want to evolve it, often I will get people to categorize foods, but not with the intention of ensuring that they maintain that understanding with food. So understanding what are foods that are, you know, minimally processed and micronutrient dense, and often you can categorize that as clean and junk food. Being able to identify that for no other reason other than to establish, you know, that 80-20 principle that I'm trying to push. And things like what is a food that is dominant in the macronutrient of protein? This is These are your lean meats, these are your, and being able to specifically go, this is a dominant food in that particular macronutrient. But then over time you want to evolve their understanding to understand like that they don't need to categorize, they need to start looking at other priorities. But at the start, You want to focus on habits and processes and routines, and rather than them looking at results, having them look at things like meal prep and ticking that. Sometimes just doing meal prep is something that needs to be celebrated. Or you know, getting MyFitnessPal and tracking your food over a week. Celebrate those small wins, because it's the processes inherent in dietary adherence that need to be ticked in order to get the results. And if I can instill anything at the start, it's the behaviors of the meal prep, being aware of meal prep, being aware of how to track your intake with MyFitnessPal, and then over time evolving their understanding. So I think at the start it's more about the understanding the processes required for to get results and celebrating those wins.
Love it. I'm all about small wins. And isn't it funny how, you know, all of us would take for granted that, you know, a lot of people don't know what is in the breakfast they've been eating for their whole life.
Yeah.
They don't know whether it's high in protein or high in fat or carbohydrates. I don't know if you guys find the same thing, but when I start to work with a client on their nutrition, I'd say 9 times out of 10, they're not even getting close to their protein intake for the day. So it can be as simple as making sure they eat enough protein, and all of a sudden the rest kind of almost takes care of itself before we even have to make any more changes in terms of looking more so at the specific calorie intake or their carbohydrates and fats.
I find protein and fiber and then water intake. Protein, fiber, and water intake are the three things that people either just are completely clueless or completely under, you know, consuming.
Yeah, most definitely. I think they're little things that they're not aware of. Or I know that we are weird human beings as fitness professionals. When we look at food and we look at an individual meal, we're able to break it down into protein, carbs, fats, what's the appropriate point. But that, when you're at that early stage, when you're at that infancy of your understanding, you're probably not aware of those things. And if you can get those initial things, that's a food that's probably dominant in protein, and this is the benefit of that, and carbs and fats and so on and so forth. But then focusing on processes that are going to lead to results.
Robbie, you've been following flexible dieting for some time now. In terms of tracking macros, what's three kind of three is a good number. Give us three actionable tips that people that are currently following flexible dieting or even just tracking their macros, regardless of what approach they're using for their nutrition, three actionable tips that they can use to make the process a little easier.
Well, I first and foremost, make sure that you've got a set of digital food scales that work. I've often heard some people are preparing meals with digital food scales that don't work, and the level of accuracy goes out the window. Moreover, make sure, so that's one tool that you need to track your macros. Second tool that you need is to use an app like MyFitnessPal to allow you to track your intake, and with that, make sure that the glossary of foods that you're selecting from are verified. Often they are, but sometimes there could be some inaccuracies in that. At the outset, that just comes down to sort of doing a little bit of extra homework to better understand the nutrient density of certain foods. But getting MyFitnessPal and digital food scales is one. Then what I would say is, when you're preparing your foods or preparing your meals or preparing your week in advance, especially if you're new to the whole concept, track your intake in advance. So have the meals laid out, whether, you know, you prepare your meals for the next couple of days, have that intake of those meals already logged in MyFitnessPal, because I think it's the behavior of constantly logging that can sometimes lead to people falling off track, because they don't want to constantly look at their phone every time they take out a meal. So track in advance, and then adjust and modify throughout the day where appropriate according to changing circumstances. So if you find that you go, you deviate from the meal plan that you've set out for yourself, that's completely fine. You just subtract that particular meal, and then you adjust and modify the intake to hit your macro targets for that particular day. At the start, if you're brand new to flexible dieting, the concept of tracking your intake, I would advocate preparing your meals in advance and tracking your intake in MyFitnessPal in advance. As you evolve and develop and better understand portion sizes, specific foods, and what you know, macronutrient they're dominant in, once you've got a better understanding of that, and that only happens through time and experience and you know, that constant effort of consistently tracking, once you've got a better understanding, then you can move more towards simply intuitive eating or tracking as you go. Or tracking as you go and then moving on to intuitive eating. I think often people fall into the trap of, here are my macros, I'm just going to track as I go. And at the end of the day, they find themselves having to gorge on particular foods in order to hit their targets. And that's not advantageous. That's not what we're advocating. What we're advocating is being flexible and where appropriate under changing circumstances to ensure that you've got it leading a sustainable lifestyle with regard to your relationship with food. So, and then I think one last thing that I would say is that the tracking of food, you know, tracking your food, preparing your meals and doing all of that is of little relevance unless you can track your compliance and the cause and effect relationship with your body composition. And where, you know, often I tell my clients, I want you to take your weight every single morning, first thing upon rising, after you go to the bathroom, before meal one, and then we'll take the weekly average so that we're not, so that we've got more accurate understanding of your body weight trends, and then track your measurements just once per week. And then being able to assess a cause and effect relationship between, you know, your nutrient intake, and then how that has an effect on your body. And then you're able to actually have an honesty session with yourself. And I know, you know, if you're just starting out, sometimes we can be in denial about the foods that we're eating or the intake that we're having. We don't think we're having much, but we really are. The other thing that by tracking your compliance and seeing whether or not you're hitting within a certain range of particular targets, tracking that compliance and looking at it objectively allows you to have that honesty session with yourself as to whether or not you're doing everything you possibly can to get the results that you want. Are you doing everything you can with regard to processes of preparation, with accuracy with things, or are you telling yourself a different narrative? Are you lying to yourself about it? And I think by tracking
the old teaspoon of peanut butter trick, eh? So see how much you can fit on the one teaspoon.
Yeah.
Well, guys, look, I can't thank you enough. This episode has been extremely valuable, and I wish I could hang around and talk to you guys all day. And, you know, speaking of good trainers, I'm keeping one of my clients waiting because I've been having too much fun here. I think we may have to do part two, I think, in the near future. But thanks so much for coming on the show. I know that everyone that's tuned in today will get a lot of value from it. And for those that are listening, make sure you go and check these guys out on social media. If you're not already, I'll have all their links in the show notes below, and go and check out the episode I did with these guys the other week. There was some good content in there as well, and check out some of their older episodes as well, because again, there's a lot of value there. Very knowledgeable human. So thanks so much, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks very much, mate.
Thanks, Danny.
And as I said, we definitely will be locking in part two in the very near future.
We'll love that. Thanks, Danny.
Pleasure. Right, guys. So thanks again for tuning in today. If you haven't subscribed already, do go and hit that subscribe button now and take a screenshot of today's show. If you've taken some value, post it up on your Instagram story, tag myself, tag these three legends, and we'll get back to any questions you have. And we'd love to hear your feedback from the show. So hope you're having an awesome day, and I'll chat to you again in the next episode. Mm-hmm.